I'm here in St. Basil's Educational Centre, and I'm talking to a group of ladies from the travelling community. And I want you first, Bernadette, to tell me about this place and the work you do.
Well, this is a traveller-specific educational centre, and it's women from the travelling community in the area who attend here, and we do VTAC up to level 5, VTAC certification up to level 5. And we're open over 20 years, and I think we provide a good service to the traveling community in the area.
So you've seen a lot of travelers coming and going all the time?
Yes, most of the women stay for 2 years. There's a two-year period. Some stay for 3 years if they're just finishing off a particular certificate. We do a range of different subjects, and we also act as a support. We do counselling as well, and a support service. Yeah. As well as that.
I suppose, Biddy Dorn, your time here in Talla, have you always lived in Talla?
Yeah.
You're settled, are you? In fact, you're all settled. Where are you living?
Kingswood.
And tell me about, are you married?
I am, yeah. I'm widowed. I have 3 children. My eldest is nearly 16. I have another boy nearly 14, and the baby's nearly 12. And yeah, I am quite settled where I am.
But you're very young to be widowed. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just happened.
Yeah. Okay, can you talk to me about your maiden name was?
Wall.
And where did your people come from?
Big Lessington, Bulldog.
Yeah, Island. Around our time now.
Our time.
And the Eileen Connors, isn't it?
Yeah.
Are you related or?
Yeah, we would be to her father.
Yeah. And what's your maiden name?
Laura.
As all right, okay. So, and why did you, any idea why the Walls came up here to Talla to settle down?
No idea, to be quite honest. Just travelling, wasn't it, really? And this was their last place. Like, years ago, the lads travelled everywhere, all of Ireland. But I don't know why we even come here. That's over 30 years ago that we came here, my father. And my mother, he's dead since, like. But I suppose my father was reared out in Atai and Bawden Glass and all around there. So this would be the road kind of going back there. Do you know that way?
Yeah, yeah. That this road would have been...
It would have really, like, going back to Blessington Way.
Yeah.
Do you know, it would have been.
And the outskirts of the city, really, would that be a reason why it would be a good place to to live?
Yeah, I suppose it would have been, yeah. Yeah. When we first came here, it was only a village, a very, very small village. It's at the ground like a city right now, like, do you know what I mean? But it was quite that time, and we're quite happy in it, but Talla's changed completely.
Mm-hmm. What's your earliest memory growing up here in Talla?
I didn't grow up here in Talla. I was married when I came here. I was having my first child, Jared, God bless and protect him, let's say 30 years ago. The greatest memory I had at Talla, it was the village. Everything was old-fashioned, there was back roads, and that's what we liked, I suppose. The old church, do you know what I mean? It was just a village. Little old, small little shop with a widow woman in it at that time. I think her name was Mrs. O'Leary or something. She lived here in the corner. All that's gone now, completely gone. Big buildings took over everything. Tell us not the one way, so that's my memory. Yeah. I don't really have a memory of childhood here.
Yeah.
Mine be now around Drogheda, and we lived in Larry Park for about 2 years when I was a little girl. That's where I made my first Holy Communion. We left, went to Drogheda and all around that country.
Did you travel separately or with a group of other travellers?
A group of other travellers.
And who were the names?
Well, my uncle's Davy Donovan's, and my aunt, she was married to a power. That was all the group, and the Hanrahan's, if you ever met Danny the Hanrahan's.
I came across,
Hanrahan's, yeah.
Well.
Well, that was that group. But they're all dead and gone now. The other ones of them. You know what I mean? There's no really travelling anymore.
Oh, wait, was that travelling in barrel caravan at the time?
Barrel caravans, tents. you name it, it was all there, horses and dogs and asses, that was the living them times, tin smitten and wanting another. Whatever they could get a pound out of, I suppose, them times.
Yeah.
Do you know?
And would you travel around each year, or was that something that you...
Each year? No, it was every week that you'd be in a different place. Sometimes you get stopping and more times you wouldn't. Do you know that way? You'd have to keep moving because I don't think there was any allowance or dole that time. So travellers had to keep going.
What was the route, the family route, the route that your group of people would have taken?
Like what, like the roads?
Yeah, the roads. Would you have remembered what towns you stopped in or
where you went? A lot of it. Around now, Lusk, Rush, Skerries, Drogheda, Navan. They weren't very fond of Navan at that time, though. It was round, and Dundalk, as near as you could come to the bother. And sometimes the lads, well, I don't remember going into Newry at that time, and into Belfast, but that's where they would go as well. Because I haven't heard my mammy talking about it, to go into Belfast, but right around Drogheda and all around there, that was the roots.
Roots would have been very important, Bernadette, wouldn't they, to the travellers? You know, that they would have had their set ways and...
Well, as far as I know, there were set routes for travellers. That people didn't travel higgledy-piggledy. Wouldn't that be true? And I know UCD have done some research on that, you see. That's about all I would know about it, just from that.
Eileen, did music follow in the family? Music was very important in your family, was it? And was there a music tradition?
Well, Paddy Dorn, he was related to my mammy, and Felix Dorn. I don't know if you've ever heard them, they were the Pipers. Well, they be related to my mammy in some way. Yep. Do you know that way?
But was there any, you know, when you were travelling at home with your parents, how many brothers and sisters did you have?
There was 11 of us all together, six girls and five boys.
And whereabouts did you come in?
I think I come in the middle. I was trying in the middle somewhere.
So, and did some of you play music as well?
No, we didn't. No. Oh, they were great singers, like, but never took anything up. My father was a great old singer, but... You know, they made their own way, like, of life. You know, them times there was no television, there was no really wireless, but the travellers entertained themselves, maybe playing horseshoes in the evening when they'd come back, you know, and maybe go hunting, or just to look around the fields, and they had their own ways, and it definitely was a complete happier way. To me, it was. Mm-hmm. It was happier. When we're travelling the country, especially.
Yeah, but it would have been okay during the summer months, but the winter months would have been cold.
No, it wasn't. No, honest to God. Not that I can remember very, very bad cold. I don't know if I was a child or not, but I can't remember. Now that I look at my own children and they have gas and heat and wanting another, and sometimes they can be... I can't remember very, very being very cold. You know, I don't know why. Because we're always running around out in the fields with maybe dasses or... going up the roads with the dogs and our brothers going with us and friends going with us. We were skipping and come back to the big open fires and let it be snowing. So it was, yeah. No, it wasn't bad. And hardly ever a child been sick, really sick that time.
Wouldn't you also go different routes in the winter that would be more sheltered? Wasn't that another big...
Kind of make it back up to Dublin in the winter, as near as to Dublin as it possibly could in the winter.
Yeah.
They would, yeah.
Why would that be now? Would it more shelter?
It would be more shelter. Like, I know in Connemara, where I'm from, that travellers couldn't travel there in winter because it was too wild. You wouldn't get, a tent wouldn't stay. You know, they'd have to move inland. They'd go to Tuam, I think, in the winter months, or else they'd winter in a house. That was another thing.
What kind of... You said that it was the... You know, you remember the barrel caravans and you know, it was slow moving.
Yeah.
How did the men make a living? How were they making ends meet?
Tinsmiths. They'd gather... there was... Oh, God, their hair, some kind of hair of... I don't know what it was. Feathers or something. They'd... duck feathers. Something like that. I haven't heard my mummy saying. They'd sell that... They'd get ties for rags sometimes when they come back up from Dublin. The women would go hawking. And as my uncle used to say, well, we were living off the fat of the land, and that was the farmers. They'd get butter from the farmers, they'd get milk from the farmers, they'd get potatoes, they'd get meat, they'd get nearly everything coming down that farmyard. They'd get big yolks of eggs and yolks of milk. Really and truly, to get everything, cakes of bread. If you didn't get the bread, they'd get the flour. And the women them times was great, great bakers. I often seen the old cakes out along the ditches, many a time often, half of it like. But you could smell the bacon it, and they'd have it over, covered over with maybe old dishcloths. If they hadn't got a dishcloth, a bit of a cloth, would surely do, just to keep it moist. So they'd bake their own bread, cook everything from the farmyard. No, they'd get it like, they'd ask for it.
But what about the cooking utensils? What do they cook the bread on?
My mammy had an old, God, I forget, what do you call it, Billy? A baker. A baker, that was the boiling pot. Skillin' pot was the baker. They'd have a little pot, a metal thing called a baker. There was a lid on it. They'd light a big fire, maybe two pots of, be on one side of the fire with the old kettle bars. They'd maybe have a pot of bacon and cabbage on the kettle bar, and besides the fire, in the grease, in the hot grease, they'd have another metal pot with potatoes in their skins. And on the other side of the fire, they'd root out the grease with a stick. That was the women, right? The real flat grease. And they'd put their baker on the top of it to get it really, really hot. So when it'd be very, very hot, something like an oven today, they'd put a bit of flour around it, put their lead back, put their cake into it, and put the lead back on it, and top the lead with the hot grease. So it'd be done from both sides, top and bottom. So that's how it's described.
Very, very interesting. I suppose the other cooking utensils might have been the griddle. Was the griddle ever used?
Yeah, it was. It was always. They hadn't got that. They had kettle bars. They're never short.
They were never short.
They'd get away anyway.
But what about? Did they? You know, I'm sure during the summer picking the blackberries.
Oh God, it was lovely. I picked them all day. Honest to God, I would. Sometimes if you get the sour ones, you put sugar on them. And what else would just be? I'll tell you.
What about nettles? Or nettle soup? Was that something?
Yeah, the travellers used that, but it had to come from a pure, clean spring river before they could use them. They say it was very, very good to purify the blood, the nettle water. A lot of travellers use that now. And are the, what do you call the watergrass? They'd use that.
Oh, the watergrass.
The watergrass.
Yes.
Again, that would have to come from a very clean stream, somewhere near the mountain. Do you know where there'd be no one really there with it like? They'd wash it.
Yeah, the watercress. Yeah.
Cress. Well, we call it the watergrass.
Watergrass.
Yeah.
What other? Because you know, as you said, you were all very healthy and very little cold.
Well, we just when we were running in a clean field that time as well, and this is the truth. There was a thing called in the field. It was sweet and sour leaf. I don't know if you tasted a bit. Maybe you wouldn't. You'd be too young. But we'd go and look for this in some part of the field, and it'd have to be clean again. And you'd wipe it with your jumper, and it was the loveliest taste. It was a sweet and a sour taste, and it was lovely. Now that come from the farmer's field itself, to where there'd be no one really trotting on. The cows, so what? The cows were there, but everything was pure that time, I suppose. But we'd eat, it was called the sweet and sour leaf.
And was it like a dog leaf or?
No, it wasn't, no. The dog leaf was for a sting. If a child got a sting of nettles, you'd wet them and you'd...
Or spit on it.
And you'd spit on it. If you hadn't got the water, and you'd chew it sometimes, for quite honest, you'd chew it and you'd scrape it into the sting.
Yeah.
And the sting was gone.
Imagine, yeah.
Honest to God, that's the way it was.
But Bernadette, cures were something that, you know, were really essential, weren't they, with, you know, with the nomadic type of people travelling around in the countryside?
Well, it was more pollution beliefs. Like you had, like all over Europe, you've got pollution beliefs with travellers and Romanies and even the Bedouins, like all have the same pollution beliefs. And there would be very, like, strict separation of clothes for cleanliness and different basins for different things. And, like, even now, traveller women are extremely... you wouldn't wash the dishcloths ordinary clothes or things like that.
Were you being very careful in that way that...
Them times, no, we weren't, no. When a child got sick, as you brought it up to yourself, if a child got a scald, I remember my little brother now. Well, he's old, but he was the youngest at that time. But when a child got a scald that time, and there was no such things as nappies, or these cloth nappies them times, the travelling women had to use whatever they got in the house to put it on the child's bottom. Now, if that child got a scald, good and well, the mother could cure that. How my mother just cured his was the scald. A woolen jumper, a really woolen jumper, and put it into the fire. And did you ever put into a woolen jumper into a fire? It doesn't, it just goes like a big lump.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't,
does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She takes some of that out and get a sip of clean water and mix it. It'll go pure black. Now that jumper go pure black because there's nothing like a centre in it. And she'd put that on the child's bottom. Next morning, garden titty, the child's skull was gone. Anything like that.
Well, that's interesting now. So the jumper would be burned.
Yeah, like a scrunch.
Yeah, it would all kind of come in together.
In a big heap, yeah.
Like a sponge.
Yeah.
And then it would be mixed with water.
Water, and the child's skull was gone the next morning.
Were there other cures like that now?
The cure for the thrush, they say if a child, God forbid, was born, this was their belief, with a thrush. Now, that a thrush can be very, very serious in children. We know that today, because down through them, it can be very serious. But years ago, the lads, if a child got a thrush, they'd go look for one of their own people, married to the one name. Say if I was married to Wall, and my name was Wall, that person had the cure for the thrush. And then again, if the child never seen the father, that child had a complete definitely cure for the thrush. You know, if a child, God forbid, if the father died before the child was born, that child had a cure. And it was true.
What about the, if somebody was bleeding, was there a way of stopping the blood?
My aunt can stop bleeding. Well, she's in a home now, but she has to pass it on. I don't know who's going to pass it on, but she had a power to stop bleeding. Yeah.
My aunt has it.
She still has it.
What exactly did she do to stop the bleeding?
There was a prayer. She'd say a prayer. No matter how fair, because I remember my son, God forbid, 2 years ago, he was in intensive care and he had bleeding, 3 bleedings inside. He'd just been in a car accident. They didn't know where the bleeding was at, they're coming from. The doctors couldn't find the bleeding. And so I phoned her up and I said, for God's sake, do something. Whatever you're going to say, I said, say it. So she said the prayer. She was in Arklah. My son was in Beaumont. And she said the prayer. And God forbid, as if a miracle happened. First they found the first bleeding, and the second and the third one, they found them and they stopped them. And to me, she stopped them, because they couldn't find it.
Yeah, yeah. And the other cures, the shingles, and it was something very, very
They had a cure, I think, with everything. Mm. You know what I mean? They really had a cure with everything, kind of. Well, apart from, a serious disease at that time. I heard my father saying this. His father had skin cancer. And he didn't know what it was. And he was an old man, like, he was 69 years of age at that time. And he went into, well, the farmer done this. And he was going down, and the farmer said to him, oh, be God, Mick, he said, I don't like the mark on your nose, he said. It's like skin cancer to me. The skin cancer at that time, I suppose, was very rare. Don't know why, but, do you know what I mean? It's everything, God forbid it today. So that farmer cured me old daddy in 3 days. That mark was completely gone.
Again, any idea what he did?
I don't know. I really don't know. I don't know.
So cures and that were part of the tradition, part of the culture.
Do you know what I mean? Years ago, I heard my mammy say her very best friend lost her walk. She lost it for nearly 6 weeks. Now, there was no hospitals at that time. There was hospitals there, but the poor old traveller, sometimes they'd have the children in tents and wagons. And do you know what I mean? They do this. But this woman in particular lost her walk for 6 weeks. And my mammy found out where there was this woman who cured back to walk. And amazingly, about 2 days after that, this old woman that couldn't walk for 6 weeks, she was brought to this farmer's wife, and she walked again. Without the medical help, this farmer's wife helped this travelling woman to walk. So there was great things out there in the traveller's time, but an awful lot of them is gone, I think.
Yeah.
An awful lot of them.
Still prefer to go to Sean Boylan or herbalist like that now than to conventional medicine.
Yeah. Eileen and Helen Connors. It's Mary and Helen. Mary, you went around and you spoke to some of the travellers yourself.
Yeah.
Being a traveller.
Yeah.
So, what kind of stories were you picking up, or what did you record?
I was just asking them about the life of a traveller years ago, because I'm only 27 myself, and I wanted to know the history of them before, like, I was myself, like, in the world. But I found out a lot the same, what Eileen was saying about the cures, and about, like, the happy times they had together in the tents and travelling, and like there wasn't as much sickness around like that as Eileen was saying, and it was better. It was much better. It was, even when I was younger, now I found it much better than what it is today for travellers. But that's all gone now.
And did you know? They were known as tinkers and tinsmiths. That's where the name came from. Did you know any tinsmiths?
My uncle's a tinsmith. We used to watch him every day at the fire. When we're out, years ago, like when we're out in the caravans and tents, we used to watch him making the buckets. And he trained all my brothers how to do that, make the buckets. And he was also working in the training centre in Carlow and Clondalkin. And he was training over there as well, the young travellers how to do that, tinsmen.
Eileen, was tinsmithing handed down?
It must have been. That was the way of life, like, that's the way they had to survive.
Yeah, did your father go around?
I don't remember my father, but he did do it. Oh, God, surely he did do it. The last time I could remember my father, he was just to sell things at the door of houses, farmers' houses, like they were called the webs, mats and things, and lino, webs of lino, to the farmers for their kitchen floors or whatever. But my mother, she was the best, I suppose, that ever went out for the basket. I have to say it about her.
Why now?
Because she was definitely a goer. She's, God help her up there, she's 84. But, by Jesus, if she went up that farmer's yard, she would not come out without it.
Without selling something.
Without selling something. Plus, she'd sell out of the basket. She'd maybe bring down maize out of that house, the farmer's house, this is the God's truth. Them, sometimes maybe a bucket of potatoes or maybe a half bag of potatoes. Remember the old sacks them times. Cabbage, whatever was there, she'd get milk. She'd get a yolk of eggs coming out of it. And plus, maybe money that time was scarce, I suppose. She'd still get a small few quid. She'd go in then, and if we were in Drogheda, she'd go in from Drogheda to Hector Gray's. I don't know if you can remember this. I suppose you'd never tell it this. It's in O'Connell's Bridge, that time. That's where she used to buy her work. We just call it work. She'd buy maybe a big box of work in Hector Gray's.
What was she buying?
She'd buy maybe big old things that time. They were called, there were two little things stuck together, like a cat and, no, two dogs. Now I believe they're very antical things. She'd buy the big old ducks for the farmer's yards. It wasn't a duck, it was a duck's head, but it was a butter thing, a butter dish. All them kinds of things, and big things that the farmers would need. Well, that's what she used to sell. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But you'd have to go to Dublin for them in Hector Gray's.
So
and the Connie brothers, I don't know where they were, I haven't heard her mention them as well, the Connie brothers. She'd buy more things from them. Maybe big old mats for the farmers' doors, the big old wooden ones or the wool ones. All them. Look, she was a really, really outstanding hard goer. She'd have to go from, sometimes 7 o'clock in the morning, she'd have to meet the bus in Drogheda, be in Dublin in Connolly Station, or Store Street, sorry. Walk and distance from Store Street down to the Connolly Brothers and then to Hector Gray's. It was a great walk. We often went with her sometimes, maybe one or two of us. She'd have to get it delivered back to the bus. And then my father picked her up from the bus in Drogheda. And the next day they'd be out. No, surely don't outsell him. You had to do it. There was no other way.
Did you notice that she had great energy could do this every
day? She never complained. Mammy never complained. I never heard tell of her complaining with a pain of her head or she wasn't able to go. She just went. That was it.
Yeah.
Honest to God, she did. So.
Is it true that some of the travelling women would have the gift of fortune-telling, and they used to do this.
An awful lot of them had it. But an awful lot of them didn't use it, like, they were afraid to use it. Do you know what I mean? I remember my aunt, she's dead now, I believe, I don't know how true this is, it was in England, she went to England. She was an aged woman, but she was telling a fortune one day, and she was a great fortune-teller as well. And coming out of the house was a very rainy day. Me old daddy now, mummy, they're dead and gone. They never believed in anything like that. They'd always say, the only one could ever tell your future and your fortune, your past, was the Almighty himself. So they would never agreed with me aunt, Lord mercy on her, if she told fortunes. But she did start picking it up anyway in England. So one day she was in England and she started to tell fortunes and she was very good at it. So the more she got, the more she went along with it, like, for money. So one day she came out of this house and it was raining and a box of matches automatically went in front of her pocket. She'd never done it from that day to this. She got the fright of her life. Never again.
The matches went in her pocket.
That was the end of her. She never told fortunes again because she wasn't supposed to tell them. I don't believe in fortune telling.
Yeah.
No, I don't.
I mean, you just nodded your head there. Did you hear of any of that?
Yeah. My granat, she's a fortune teller. Maggie Murphy, is it on?
Yeah, Maggie Murphy.
She's a great fortune teller, she is. She's still doing it today.
Yeah. And she's what does she do? Does she read palms or does she read cards?
She'd read hand, she'd do the tarot cards or she'd do the crystal ball, whatever. She's very good. She's well known for it, actually.
Yeah. Where did she get it from?
Probably went into it.
Yeah. Where did she get it from?
It's from me old mummy, what did I do?
It's supposed to be handed down, really, wouldn't it? Yeah. Yeah, they're really good at it, weren't they?
Yeah. Bernadette, why do you think that the tradition in the travelling community have this ability?
Well,
or gift, or whatever you call it.
I think it's a different ethnicity, and that you see a different pattern of religion. I think the traveller pattern of religion or worship would be more similar to Asia than maybe Europe, and maybe that's how it was brought in. Like if you accept the travellers are part of the Romani tradition, and that they came into Europe around the 12th century from North India, so
yeah.
I imagine it's that.
I mean,
and there would be other similarities with having altars in the house, little altars, and certain other making pilgrimages, more again like the way Eastern people worship than Europeans. I think it's one of the patterns you can see.
Eileen, the symbolism meant a lot, you know, wearing a cross or carrying a rosary beads or the other images, yeah. Like that. You know, was that done in?
That was done in our life as well, in my life and in my father's time. My father never, I don't think he ever missed Mass in his life, and that is the God's truth. He never, no matter where that chapel was. I remember us in Drogheda somewhere, it was round Drogheda somewhere, and it was of a Sunday morning, and I can tell you, and we were bogging after him, going to Mass. And the sweat, now, that time we were young, and the sweat was pumping out of us. He had his hand in his hat in front of us, and he was walking up this hill, and he had to go to Mass. No matter how far the distance, it never stopped him to go to Mass, never in his whole divine life. He went one time, we were stopping in Coolig, and he was more than sick. He was more than sick. Now, when I say Coolig, that time he had to go about 2.5 fields to get to the chapel. He took a shortcut. So him and his old friend went to Mass, and we all kept saying, for God's sake, Daddy, don't go to Mass. But he did. He did. He had to go to Mass, and that was if he had died in the chapel and to Mass, he had to go. So back he was coming, and he fell in the gap coming back. And he was more than bad. So the ambulance was called from in the wagon, and at that time he was sent to far side of the city, Temple Street. No, God. What do you call that hospital beside the jail, Biddy? That's where he was sent. They thought then when they brought him in, he was a 90s, and they thought he'd like bowel cancer or something in his stomach, or something to do with his stomach. But thousand thanks to God, he still had to go to Mass that day. He ended up in intensive care that day. It didn't matter. He had to go to Mass, and there was no difference about it. He ended up in intensive care for a good few days, and they didn't know what was wrong with him. So thanks be to God, he come out, and he died nearly 80 years of age. So, you know, he has still to go to Mass.
Yeah.
But I think that's nearly gone. Some parts of the travellers now, even me own, I often coaxed them and begged them to go to Mass. For God's sake, go to Mass. They're not listening. That's me own children I'm talking about.
Yeah. Helen, you would be... would you have...
As a baby.
I know you're very young, but would you be a strong believer in religion? Or?
I wouldn't know, yeah.
Yeah.
Very strong believer. You'd have to be in our family.
Why?
I don't know, my father is very religious and my mother. Then they had 17 children, so we'd all have to, every Sunday when we were younger, we'd have to go to Mass. If we didn't go to Mass, we'd have to clean all day, or she'd have to go out and wash clothes.
Your mother had 17 children?
17 children, yeah. 9 boys and 8 girls.
Did they all survive?
16 survived. They had a little brother that died 8 years ago with leukemia. He was 3. So during his illness as well, religion was a very big thing.
Yeah.
Like you go to a lot of cured and people trying to help them like be cured and all that. So you knew every holy person around Ireland because you'd visit them all with him, not trying to help him. But he died. He passed away when he was 3.
My goodness. So, Would a pilgrimage take place in the with the travellers? Would a certain time during the year would you go to some place like Crowpatrick or?
Yeah, we go to Knock and them places, to Knock, and yeah, we would go to Lourdes. My sister now is going to Lourdes, her and her two or three children, I think. Yeah, they're great, still great believers, like out there. You know, the only thing you have in life is God. That's where the travellers look at it.
Yeah. But travelling is a big part of being a traveller, because you're on the road, and that's obviously where the name came from. Fairs were always, you know, were they places that you would focus in on during the year and go to certain fairs? Or?
Well, it was Ballinasloe Fair. I'm quite honest, I was never at it. Ballinasloe. No, never was at it.
Did you ever go to the fairs?
Did, yeah.
Where'd you go?
Well, you go to Ballinasloe, you go to...
The Puck Fair every year.
Puck Fair. What's that one in Carla?
I'm not sure.
The one we used to go to as well. But a lot of travellers go, because if you didn't see travellers, like you'd often hear Daddy saying, well, I never see such a traveller man in years. Oh, we'll go to Ballinasloe, or we'll go to Puck and we'll see him. Like, you're always sure to meet him down there during the year. So it was kind of like a traveller's meeting spot as well, was all the fairs. That's where everyone used to go to meet up with one another.
And, yeah, would a lot of hawking and things like that go on? You know, bringing your wares to sell them at the fairs? And
I suppose that's still happening today, like, to bring their things to the fair and sell them, like, horses and
harnesses.
Like that. Harnesses, and they're very, very hard to be got now, harnesses. You know, a harness, good harness. They say the Irish harness was the best. I don't know how that was. That was old Patterson's years ago. That's who just made all the harness years ago. I often remember the lads going in to get a set made. That was in Dublin as well, but they're all gone now. Patterson's just to make the harness. So I don't know.
Yeah, but meeting places around the countryside, and you were saying, Bernadette, going to Crowpatrick is very important.
Crowpatrick, and wealthy travellers would even go as far as the Holy Land. You'd hear them saying that they'd like to visit the Holy Land if they had the money or if they could, yeah. And the Reek would be another one, yeah. Would, like, for commonly, the people would go to Crowpatrick. That would be a local one.
Yeah.
Also Patterns. I think people would go to Pattern Fairs. That would be and to Holy Wells. That would be another pilgrimage that people would try to make.
And the Patterns of a grave, like, to make sure that they wouldn't miss them, like, just every year, like.
That's to where?
If somebody dies.
Yeah.
We'll get a mass said every month for the full year, and then after that, every year. As long as, like, you live, you'll get the grave blessed. And there's also a mass or something.
Yeah. Again, going back to symbolism, and if you look at a traveller's grave, you'll see all kinds of things there. You'll see it's very flamboyant, dressed up.
Yeah.
And same in the house. The house is the same.
Yeah, but suppose travellers don't want to forget, even though they're not. Sometimes people say they're dead. But you still... To us, like, my father's dead, 12 year? And it did definitely take an awful lot out of every one of us, because he was very, very good to us. But saying all that, when you go to the grave, to me and to a lot of us, you imagine that he's just looking at you, that he never, some way in our lives, that he never really did leave. Because strange things start happening, and I don't know if you wanted me to talk about this or not.
I do indeed. Go on.
But strange things happened to us when he even went. He kind of come back and warned us, and this is the truth. He come back and warned me about my sister. Me and my sister didn't speak. She's the eldest sister. So we had this stupid argument, so we never spoke. And he was about, he wouldn't have been a year dead. He was coming in to be a year dead. But I had this we were in Cross McLean, stopping in Cross McLean, and she was here in Talla, and she's stubborn, and I was stubborn at that time too. But we didn't talk, but this night I went to bed and I had this very, very, very weird dream about my father, right? And he was in the old trailer that he had before he died, and he was saying to me, he was making tea, that's what he was doing, yeah, he was making tea. And I went in and had a cup of tea, and he knew I didn't take sugar. He said, you don't take sugar, Eileen, he said, no. So he gave me a white cup with dribbles on it, you know, like somebody's after using it. But in the dream I knew he was dead. And I said, no, I said, thanks very much. Now, Eileen, said, you're taking that cup out of here. Don't let the children break the cup, a white cup. I said, God, I won't, Daddy. So I went out and I was afraid in the dream, and I knew he was dead and all this. But anyway, so the next day I come in, I'm still in the dream, and he was lying in the bed, and he had a white, like a white vest on him, but it was like all marks of tea in it. And I said, what's wrong with you, Daddy? And he was crying. He said, Eileen, our nanny said, is very, very sick. I said, don't be stupid, that old, I won't say what I said, but I said it anyway. I said, she's not sick, it's not a hapert wrong. He said, Nan, he said, is very, very sick. So the next morning I woke up, I was afraid now of my life. So I got my son that time, he was only very young, to bring me to Dublin, to tell my sister what my father was at the scene. And she thought I was going in like to make it up to her, which I wouldn't. But I went into her and she said, this is the very word I said to her, Nan, you're very, very sick. No, thanks be to God Almighty, I'm not. Thanks be to your Almighty God. And she kept, no, Nan, biddy. And she kept clapping herself, as if I was wishing this on her. God forbid, I surely wouldn't wish it on nobody. I said, Nan, this is not my word. I said, this is me. Daddy's word. I said, he told me, said to tell you that you're very, very sick. No, thanks be to God, you were not lucky. All this one thing and another. So a week after, it came to 12 months of my father, so we all gathered around. Now, the blessings of the grave. She wasn't able to get out of the van, her son's van, that was Jim's van. She was sitting in the van and she was trembling and she was sweating and she was trembling. So we went to the pub and she wasn't able to move. So her son had a rusher from there to Blanchardstown Hospital, and that's where they found out about her heart. She was diabetic. They found out all these things. So I went to see her when she got out of it, thank God she did. And I said to her, Nan, I said, I never said them words. I said, he said them and told me to tell you. So it was weird. He was coming beyond the grave to tell me that she was sick. She never knew she was sick. Like, Nan never took tablets at that time. That's 12 years ago. Well, it wouldn't be 11 years because she was a year dead. And he came back and told me how sick his daughter was. Like, that's my sister. So I told her. So therefore, they never, to us, they never leave. There, you can't, sometimes you can't see them, but you know they're there. I don't know why I guess I'm saying that, but they're there. Mm-hmm. The feeling. Do you know? I don't know.
It's extraordinary, isn't it? But, you know, a big part of the what went on in the countryside long ago was pishogue working. And, you know the pishogues? And people used to, you could work it two ways. You could put rotten eggs in a person's haystack. Did you ever hear that?
Oh, that was the curse.
Cursing.
I heard that about... I heard a documentary about that on television. Now, this wasn't to do with the travellers. I never heard tell of that. I won't tell a lie. God forbid I didn't. But to say if they wanted to curse, there was weird things they could do. Some throw something rotten up in the ditch and the land would go rotten. I've seen the documentary about that. But through the travellers, I've never heard that. God is my witness, no.
Yeah.
I didn't.
But, you know, with religion and being so powerful and you know, having such a strong belief, that they used to, you know, sometimes people would work it the other way, you know, as well as saying, I hope, you know, I wish you well and wish you get better, but I wish
But I think to me, to my life, and I don't care what anybody says, to me, bad curses doesn't come from God. No matter how much you curse a person, for God's sake, God sends nothing only good out. So if a person curses and that, God forbid, if that other poor person meets it, and I think I call them evil. Curse, bad curses doesn't come from God. God doesn't, do you know what I mean? We're all God's children, no matter what we do through life, and no matter how, yeah, I know you'll never hurt a person, but some days you don't do good deeds every day, but that God won't, is not going to judge you for that. Or he's not going to put a curse on that innocent person, maybe the stray things that he have, him or her have. And I don't think it's fair. To me it's not. I wouldn't curse a person. I don't think anyone would. Not that I know of anyway. Evil curses, no. God forbid they wouldn't, no.
But moving on to other traditions in your culture, if somebody died, everything belonging to that person would be burned.
No, that's not happening in ours. That happens mostly in the gypsies, the English gypsies. If a person dies in the trailer, they will burn everything, all the contents in that trailer, they'll burn everything out. But not to us anyway. I've never heard of us doing it, to burn a trailer or to burn a... No, I don't think so, no. No.
Or did you ever come across, at any stage, Mary or Helen, other... What would other traditions be that would happen within...
Well, the trailer burning out, the only way anyone belonged to us would do it is if the person used to live in it. Because I remember my nephew got knocked down 3 years ago, this month in March, and he was actually living in a caravan. And so the woman, my brother, did actually burn it. Because the way it is, like, you couldn't sell on that caravan or anything like that. He actually did burn his caravan, but not in little, like, no clothes or belongings belong to the child or a person wouldn't be burnt. It would just that caravan that he used to live in would be burnt.
Yeah.
Hey, people are different things, because I know someone out that burns clothes. A lot of people want to die for the release of soul. I know a woman, I seen her doing it. When her husband died, she put his clothes in the backyard and she burned them and prayed, and the smoke just come up, like, it's like releasing his soul, give his soul to God. Yeah. I seen her actually doing it, but I just first my witness it, like.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering, is it similar to the Hindu tradition that when someone's body is burnt, that then their soul is released? That I wonder, did it translate
derive from
that, exactly, the burning the clothes and would be to get rid of the spirit, so that the spirit wouldn't be attached then to the clothes.
Eileen, you just mentioned the Irish gypsies as opposed to the English gypsies. Is there a big difference?
Oh God, there is a complete big difference between the English gypsies and the Irish travellers. If you go to some parts of England this minute, and I'm not saying them all, but I'm talking about an awful lot of them, they hate the Irish traveller. That's the English gypsies. Now, they live, like, the one way kind of us lives in trailers and sites and things like that, but they have a complete different way of life than the Irish traveller. To me, they have, and the ones that I've met and know really well, they have a complete different ways of life.
Could you point out some of those differences?
I suppose the way they live, they burn the trailers, as I said. An awful lot of them burn trailers. I don't know, there's a big difference. There's a complete big difference of them.
Yeah.
Do you know? There is.
Different ways. Other ways is different. And, yeah.
They're very rough as well with the kids, I think. They run around with more shoes, don't they?
No, these are the issues I'm talking about, Mary. They're very well-to-do people. No, there's Stone Town millionaires, for God's sake. Not a lot of them now. Again. They're all called English gypsies. If you go to England, there's all the gypsies.
Yeah.
Well, there goes now and droves these people, very well-to-do people.
More like
working.
A posher, exactly. upper-class traveller. Yeah. More like...
My point now would say that all travellers in Europe are similar, you know, and politically they would have a seat on the Council of Europe, and they also have a seat in the UN. Like, I think it's Ian Hancock has the seat in the UN. He's a gypsy academic. So there is similarities, and I think a few years ago, Pavé Point were trying to get an all-traveller gypsy flag. There was even talk of that, but because, again, I think it's the Irish travellers are politically with the Roma Congress. There's a tread, a political tread, if you like, falling through. But it is believed that all... In the 16th century, there was a massive genocide of gypsies all over Europe, and that's very well documented. And what they think happened was that in the West, travellers went underground, gypsies went underground, and at that time, their language changed, and they took on localized names that would be similar to the local tradition. Like in Ireland, you have 150 traveller names, but they're all names of people who were big people in the 16th century, like Joyce's, Connors, Hutchinson's, you know, so they think that in times of conflict, there's this pattern that the people who would be related or who would have some connection with a powerful family will often take on that name, like the way blacks in the US took on white landlords' names at the turn, after the Civil War, because that gave them a certain amount of protection within society if it was known they were related to that powerful family. And all over Europe, you have this similar pattern of powerful gypsies and travellers having powerful names and also having a localised language with Romani undertones, but that's set from the 16th century. And linguists can trace Kant and Gammon to the 16th century. So that has been proven. So that's...
Yeah. So the language was part of your culture as well.
Yeah.
All the gammon, yeah. I'm sure everyone knows that gammon now. She can't even speak gammon anymore, for God's sake. I don't know why they done that. That was a little thing, like, was supposed to be there.
Give away their secrets.
You know what I mean? I don't know why they done it.
Yeah. What about keeping amongst yourselves, not marrying outside of your own circle? You know, you marrying for a second cousins, third cousins, keeping kind of within.
No, not that's all gone now. That's completely finished, but... All that never happened to us. If you've met a person, fell in love with him, you marry that person. No matter what his name was, him or her name was. That's, do you know what I mean? Years ago now, it was kind of, travellers was kind of, to me, they were kind of afraid of one another. They didn't like mixing in with people. Do you know what I mean? Because some people, class as travellers, they're all the one bunch. Do you know? But that's not true. Travellers has their own complete way. The very same as you have your way of life. Bernadette has her way of life. Do you know? But if a poor old traveller done anything, even years ago, I'd be glad them tinkers done all that. Do you know, and it wasn't fair. They were downgraded even before they could speak. But no, I think that's gone. Travellers, if a traveller woman or man meet anyone they love, well, that's it. No matter him or her, it doesn't matter. Honest to God. So it's a thing of the past.
And would you find that the tradition, so, of not, say, going out and marrying somebody from the settled community
sisters married to the settled community. Two brothers, they married two brothers. Two sisters married two brothers. One is dead now, the Lord have mercy on Tom. He was married to my sister Mag. And the other was John Carmody. He married my sister Ellie. So, and I have another sister. She was the second eldest. She's married to Cooney. He was a settled boy as well.
Yeah. But Biddy, you're married. You were married. And.
Yeah.
Wall would have been part of your family that you would have been related. Helen, are you're married?
Yeah, I was Donoghue before I married. I married a Connors. But I think I'm the only one in the family that married an outsider. Because all the rest is married to cousins. And I was the only one that didn't marry a cousin. And I have another sister now getting married who's settled by as well. She'd be another... kind of marrying an outsider, because all the rest is all married into the family, so that'd be different.
And the gamest marriage pattern, and you get it again all over Europe with gypsies and travellers, you get a pattern of marriage that people marry near relations, and then you get it again in North India, and like it's one of the 12 marriage patterns in the world that anthropologists can trace, you know?
Yeah.
So again, it shows that there is, it's one of the sociological links, if you like.
It's very interesting. What about territory? Is that important within your community?
What do you mean?
That you stay in the one, you don't, that you have a home, that you have a place where you home into, that you come back to always?
No, like...
Always, in your parents' time.
Oh, my parents' time. Oh, yeah, it was always home. And no matter where you were, even in England, it wasn't to me, although I was married out there, had a family, but home to me was Ireland and my family.
But whereabouts at home?
That time, they were living here in Talla. As I said, we came here over 30 years ago. And it was still home, like, although there was no site there at that time. It was only a big, big wild field, and there was old trailers there, and... there was no toilets there, believe it or not, no wash machines, nothing. Just the sky and the earth, and the lads were just living between them two places, the sky and the earth, and that was just it. Yeah. But it was still home to me.
Helen, do you find a place that you could call your home?
Home is Talla, all of us, I think, because no matter where we go, like after I get married, we decided to go travelling. Me and my husband decided to go travelling. Because we haven't travelled in a while. So I think we went to Navan for 2 weeks. And I ended up crying, I want to go home. I said, where's home? I said, I want to go home to Talla, that's my home. So we never travelled since. Like we often went to England for a week to Pug Fair or something, or probably down to Knock for a week, but that'd be it. You'd wouldn't go no longer than a week or two.
Yeah.
And you'd be home to Talla again.
Mary?
So be...
Yeah, it's the same as Helen. The Talla, that's her home.
Biddy?
Same, exact same cylinder. when I got married first, I went to Galway. And when I used to see the D Reg, I used to cry. I said, I want to get back to Salah.
What I notice, when you ask a traveller where they're from, they'll tell you where the people are buried. And that's the way they'll define where they're from. And I've noticed that since I came here. And you never hear a settled person saying it. A settled person will say where they live now or where the people are from. But a traveller will always define where they're from as to where their family is buried.
Yeah, because if anyone asks me, where are you from? I'll say Tipperary, because that's where my family hailed from, was Rosgray in Tipperary and Nain and all, and that's where my brother's buried. So if anyone says, well, where are you from? Well, I won't actually say Talla. I'll say, we're from Tipperary. But say, where do you live now? Well, I live in Dublin now, but we're actually from Tipperary. I think that's what travellers is like, they will tell you where.
It's the same as what Bernard just said there now about where the family's buried. I was thinking about going to London for a few months. My sister's getting married. But what stopped me, my husband's buried in the Bonabrina, so I wouldn't go to London. I says, no, because I'm going to spend too long away, like, from there. But it is basically where the family member's buried too, that keeps you there.
Money, does that play a big part in the travellers? They always understood the value of money and how to look after it, how to spare it.
Yeah, but you see, again, coming back to it, travellers got it very, very tough, as I told you a minute ago. They got it more than tough. When they got a few pounds, some of them, they respected that money. They were going to say, well, look, this is it. It's hard without a few pounds. It's hardship. So they held on to it. They held on to it as much as they could, got their families married out of it. If they had sons, try their living best to get their son on the road to a good life, like. Maybe get him a trailer, maybe get him an old van, or show him the way of life. Without, do you know what I mean? Show him the way, or her, the life. So this is why travellers had to respect the money when they got it. Because an awful lot of them, they hadn't got it. As I said, I came like from a very, very poor background, but a happy background. Do you know what I mean? We didn't have luxury. I don't think an awful lot of travellers, just more me, like, had it later. But saying all that, was a happy, happy time. So when the travellers got a few pounds, they held on to it, they respected it. If they got a pound, they try and make two out of it, some of them. If they got a fiver, they had to make a tenner out of it. So this way, some of them just held on to that. And fair play to them, like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know when the travellers have a wedding or a funeral, there is so much money spent on that event. And at the back of it, travellers always seem to be without money, have very little of it, but they'll always pull out money for that occasion.
Yeah, but why wouldn't they? Like, if their daughter or son was getting married, they're going to spend the last shilling of that for their sons or daughter. It's not a thing of a show. A lot of travellers maybe do it for a show, but there's an awful lot of them don't do it for a show. They do it from completely their heart. This is what I'm saying. They work, some of them work, and maybe save the allowance for years upon years, and maybe save a little bit out of their dole to put it away for their children. Because, like, what way else is a traveller going to get money? There's an awful lot of work, no work out there for the elderly, like the aged man or the aged woman now. Do you know what I mean? And some of them is not able to work. So they saved all their whole life, put a few pound away, their old allowance, their dole, a little bit out of the dole. Now, an awful lot of travellers have given up smoking and drinking just so they can put away a little bit for their child or their children. So they can, God forbid, if a funeral took place, they can bury that person with respect. They have the few pound there to do that.
So is security important then?
It is very, very important to a traveller. Do you know what I mean? A traveller sometimes, as poor as they look, they still have the pride. They still have that little pride. God forbid, as I said again, if a traveller's died, that other traveller's not going to go out and with a handout to his friends down the road. He's loads and lots of money. He's not going to do that. Because again, the pride is there, a little bit of respect. That's why the little bit of money, just put away for them occasions.
Another part of, I suppose, the downside of that would be that, you know, within your community, there's a lot of fighting and there's a lot of drinking.
Well, thanks, but Almighty God, I'm one saying, God forbid and heaven forbid that we didn't come from our family. And heaven forbid again, yes, drinking, I drink. Who doesn't take a drink? But I know how to carry a drink. Do you know what I mean? But heaven forbid, there are no violence in my family. A simple argument. You'll have, I'll argue, and we'll all argue, running human, but not to fight or violence or big ways, nothing like that. Thank God for it. No.
Same here.
No, thanks for the God. Bad enough.
And?
Same here. A very fine family. Don't like shopping problems.
But you would often see some travellers, like, to be a lot of shootings in other people's families, or to be a lot of stabbing, or even murders, really, yeah. You'd be told, like, your family would say, well, for God's sake, keep away from them, or don't mix, and, like, you'd be told who to hang around with, and who to probably talk to, but be only for your own good, like, they'd be telling you what people to keep away from, and who you could be friends with, or whatever. But there is a lot of violence out there today in travellers. There's a lot.
There's a lot of violence out there anyway within all of society. And I know Dr. Sinead Ní Hinnéir has done a lot of work on this. And I know from her figures, she has proved that travellers have a lower crime rate of serious crime and a lower alcohol rate than the settled community per head of population.
But there are a lot of family feuds between the different travelling families.
I read in the paper there a couple of weeks ago about a family somewhere in Mullingar, was it? Then again, we don't know them. And God help the poor people that's in trouble with anybody. Because I know there's an awful lot of travellers out there doesn't want anything like that. Do you know what I mean? When you were in a family today, you pray every day and you pray every night for that child to come home safely without meeting a bad person that's going to hurt him or her. That's a mother's way of life. And I'm sure them people, some of them, a lot of them, that doesn't want violence either. It's just a thing now of this new age. It must be the new age that an awful lot of travellers really hurting one another. Put it like that. But as Bernadette said again, it's out there in every corner. Without a traveller doing it, it's out there in every corner of the world that's happening now today. I don't know why, but it's happening.
Yeah, because remember, I have my husband, Bernard read the paper, my husband was murdered by 5 settlemen. And Bernard was actually reading the paper at that time, and it says that it was because he was a traveller or something like that. Remember, Bernard?
The Sunday trip.
When the, yeah. Because he was a traveller.
That it was a racist attack because he was a traveller. That was because it was an unprovoked attack. And he was.
So your husband was murdered because he was a traveller?
Well, it said on the paper it was because he was a traveller, and the police were saying it was a mistaken identity. So we don't know yet till the minister brought to court, and we'll see if they say, like, why. Because he didn't do anything, he was a very quiet man.
The Sunday Tribune, after the following few weeks later, did state that it was a racist attack. So, yeah.
Biddy, you had a lot of tragedy in your life.
I did, yeah. I lost my husband 9 years ago. He was in a car accident in Limerick. He was seven other few lads. He was passing out, and it was a head-on collision. And he was killed in the car, and my brother was left brain damaged. And 5 years later, my brother hung himself. He was separated from his wife. And,
How can you cope with that? I mean, is that something that... you're still a very young woman.
It's something you learn to live with. It's something you'll never forget. It's a pain that you carry every day. But you know no other way. It is, like, you know, you can't just go and do something to yourself. You have to think of your 3 children. And you have to think of, like, I'm only one person on my own. And, like, I'm not the best in the world, but what I do, like, there's no one else would do it for them. And I can't turn away and walk away from them because they didn't ask them into the world. And I know myself that no one would look after them the way that I would. So you have to stand, you know.
Yeah.
But no one wants to be in this position. It is hard.
Eileen, you had tragedy as well.
Yeah, about 8 years ago, wasn't it, Biddy? Yeah. My husband took his own life in Wrexham. He took it. We were living in Newry at the time. We're separated. And he just went to England and done that. Took his life. Never was sick in his life. Never had nerve trouble. Just done it.
Yeah. So the 3 of you have difficult problems. How do you cope? I mean, do you have to be hard? Do you have to?
I think I'm coping for my kids and religion. Like, do you know what I mean? I think, like, I'm suffering in this world to get to God, like, to my husband. That he's waiting for me. That's what's keeping me going. The children and religion. Jar's waiting for me with God, like.
Yeah. Is there something within the travelling community that gives you that strength, you know, that you have over the generations, travellers have suffered
greatly? I suppose, in a way, that to me saying it, and I can guarantee T. Billy might agree with me, and so would Mary and Bernadette, that we were blessed in our own way. Let the world look upon us if they want. But to me, I think that the only thing kept the likes of me and Biddy and Mary afloat was our families. Now, I'm not talking about our children. Yeah, they are part of that. But I'm talking about, say, our brothers and sisters. They were there. Do you know what I mean? No matter how much they don't sometimes talk to you, they're still there for you. You can walk back one hand longer than the other to your family when you're in misery or in pain. They will help you. And that way we're blessed. I know an awful lot of settled people out there that they hadn't got what we have. We had that at least blessed from our family. I think that's what kept us afloat an awful lot of the times. Because if I get very, very depressed sometimes, I can walk out into my mommy's trailer. I can walk into my brother Paddy's trailer. I can walk into my sister Ali's trailer. So therefore, you can talk about your feelings. You can take it out instead of sitting and bottling yourself up and drinking yourself to death or smoking yourself to death. No, there's someone there to pick you out of that hole at some time in your life. And that's one of your family, to me anyway. And I know that for a certain fact. I imagine only for me, without my husband being dead, before even he died, I imagine only for my family, even though sometimes I didn't get on with them, but at least I knew they were there. Imagine I wouldn't have met it so far. I wouldn't have. I know that myself, I wouldn't have. Thank God I did.
Well, you know, drugs have now played a big part in all the different areas. Has it got into the travelling
community? It's a curse in the travellers' community now. It's a curse. It's something like when I was getting reared up, never knew nothing about anything like that. I never hardly even took a painkiller, for God's sake. Do you know what I mean? You'd suffer that, you'd say it was over the wind that done it to you, you'd blame something, but you'd never even ask for an aspirin. Not me anyway, I was one never took tablets, and still, thanks be to God, I hope I never will need them. But it's a curse, the drugs is a curse in parts of the travelling community. It is, honest to God. An awful lot of people is out there hurting themselves, killing themselves. Do you know what I mean? And an awful lot of drugs is doing an awful lot of this. And to me, it's a curse.
Have any of you seen it affect other families in the travelling community?
We have, yeah. I've seen this.
In what way now?
His family, one boy took his own life through the drugs. And it was drugs of all the part of it to me. So therefore it's going to eat the earth. And there's nothing the law can do about it. It's just getting in, no matter how the police stop it. It's just getting in. It's a curse to the world. Honest to God it is. That's my point about it anyway.
Tell me, is there a difference between a city traveller and a rural country traveller?
I think it's equal now because, you know, when you say drugs, they're saying, like, you know, they're everywhere now, you know. And to me, like, the city is in the country now, you know. So years ago it was different because they'd be going and pawning cars. So now they've cars, you know, they can be one place in an hour. And so it's equal now, you know.
Company. I think the company.
Yeah. Okay, right. Education in the travelling community. It must have been difficult for you, Eileen, growing up, to go to school because you were on the road all the time.
We went to school in Finglas. Went to school every morning with other local children, got washed. We had an awful long ways to walk to school. No matter how cold the mornings was, me and my, God help them, poor old brothers and sisters, to go to school. Some mornings you wouldn't have a coat, more mornings you'd be lucky you'd have a coat. But, saying all that, we went in with the local children, we were some of their pals. We'd be put sitting in a corner, me and my sister. We'd have an awful long way to walk to school. We'd be put sitting in a corner and we'd be given a colouring book and a load about broken cranes to draw all day. While the other children was learning, they'd get homework. They'd get sums on the board, they'd get writing on the board. We'd be sitting every day, yet we would go to school, learnt completely nothing. So then I pick up comics. One day I got fed up with it because she was learning us nothing. This teacher was absolutely learning us nothing. So I went to the shop one day, my father sent me for players, never forget it, and a pint of milk. And I got myself a Tammy comic and I bought it. And I started reading through, I couldn't read it. But every word I'd miss, there was an awful lot of words I'd miss, I'd mark it. and I'd mark it, and the whole comic would be marked. So when my daddy be doing nothing in the evening time, I'd go back to him and say, "Daddy, what was that word there? And what's this word?" And I'd go over that comic, and God strike me down dead. I'd go over it and re-over it until I got all that comic read, and I'd have to know the meaning of it. So then I start going into the bigger books, and I'd mark it, and I'd mark it, because my daddy was a great scholar. And he got his education, and he was an old man, and he got it. But somehow or another, we didn't get a chance to get it. We were sent to school, but never learned. See, my father was reared in a place near Americanstown. Where's that, Biddy? In Americanstown. It's around Atai somewhere, down that country there somewhere. But they were reared. There was 12 of them reared together. And now they were more than poor times than you ever can imagine. Yet, they were sent to school every day, no matter how bad the weather was, and they all come out real good readers and writers, and could write the nicest and the loveliest letter that ever you could see. He just always be writing me, Daddy, Lord have mercy on him. And yet we never got that chance. We were sent to school but never got it. So that's where we failed.
What about you, Biddy? Did you get a chance to go to school?
No, I didn't. My mother was separated and she had 8 kids, and I was kept at home to look after them while she'd be out hawking, as they say. Well, and I'd be looking after them, so never got a chance to go to school.
And your mother was separated from your
father, yeah.
Father. So, and she had the job of bringing 8 of you up.
Well, 7, and she was pregnant another, so it wasn't long before the 8 came along. And yeah, I would be at home cooking and looking after the smaller ones to make sure that we're okay and we're kept in and that nothing would happen until she get home. And then when she come home, I'd be cooking or cleaning, whatever, and be time for bed then, you know. So the next day, the same job again.
Yeah.
So no, I never got a chance to go to school. I would have got school in, say, for about 2 months in Milltown. And I remember that very clearly, like today, and it was nice.
Were you angry with your father walking out on your mother?
I suppose you're very young, you wouldn't realise that happens, would you, at that time?
I was very angry.
Yeah. It must have been a dreadful, to leave. And but your mother, she managed, did she?
Yeah.
She got through it.
She got through it.
Yeah. Mary, what about you? Did you have schooling in your day?
I had schooling, yeah, but same story as Eileen, which is shut in the corner. There was a traveller's class, but we wasn't, like, there wasn't learners, like, reading and writing. They were basically just baking. There was no reading and writing or maths or anything until I came to St. Basil's here. And now I'm doing very well here, but there was nothing like that when I was younger. Yeah. And I'm not that old, I'm only 27, went to school in Newbridge. The only bit of schooling I had was in London when I was really young.
Yeah. Do you know, Eileen, when you were in school, were you bullied or, did the other children...
I was never bullied because I think it was the quietest person in the world, same as here. I'd walk away from arguments. Do you know what I mean? I wouldn't bother with people or the little girls that time or the boys either. I'd go to school, come back, and that'd be me. I've met friends with them, but it was no good having friends, and I always thought about it. That even in school, I'd look at other children and I'd say, that little bit of me would be angry. And I'd say to my sister, Ali, Sally, for God's sake, we're coming here every morning. Look at this. She'd give us a broken box of little old bad crayons, and sometimes you'd have to pinch the crayons down. You know, the colour in that. Which I don't think was one bit fair.
Yeah.
It wasn't. And then we had another nun, and I don't know, I can't never remember the name, but God bless her, I'd not talk bad about her. But every morning you'd be coming in from school, or going to school, you'd be freezing with the cold. And you'd be kind of sloped. Do you know, because you'd be freezing. And we'd be carrying this big fool's bag to school and learning nothing. Sitting in a fool's corner all day. And it makes me angry now, to be quite honest. But she'd tell us how to straighten up like a young lady. You know, so I got fed up with then. I just didn't care then. So then I started Mitchin School, me and my brother. We got the best baiting then of our lives, off my daddy. He found out our Mitchin School, for God's sake, was no good at going to school. So I told my brother Jack. And now Jack was younger than me. We could have been killed, raped out in the field all day, and it was very cold weather. Honest to God it was. And I said to her, Jack, I'm not going to school today because I'm learning nothing in there. Let Ali Ann, if she wants to go to school, because she loved colouring and everything. But I knew there was more to school than this. There had to be, because other children was getting it, and we wasn't getting it. So me and our Jack started Mitchin School. So we're sitting over a big bank of muck one day, and we're looking in at our real good friends that time, poor old Mary Hantrick and Jim, and she had a big pot of grub on, and we could smell the bacon and cabbage, and we were sitting in this muck where we could have been killed. She never knew nothing about us, because if she had to, she was that good of an old crater, she would have called us to the fire and give us some food, but we were afraid to show herself because we were supposed to be in school. But 3 days after that, my daddy found out about it, that we missed school. I can't tell you what happened. He gave us, so we never missed school again.
Honest to God.
That's a pattern of children being thrown into a corner, being put into special classes. Same things happens in Romania with the Roma children. It's one of the reasons they repeatedly say they want to come to Ireland, or they have to leave Romania because of the way the children are treated in school. We've had girls who wouldn't be able to read and write, they'd be able to read and write after 2 years here. And I think you could also trace it. I know the University of Birmingham have done a lot of work on it. I think they have. I think it's under the heading "How Working Class Children Are Taught to Labour." I think that's the title of their piece. It would be similar patterns, even with working class children, that you could see how they would be neglected by the educational system to a certain degree. That pattern would be there.
Biddy, your children now, they're going to school, and yeah. How are they doing?
They're doing great. My eldest boy, he's doing his junior cert now, and I'm hoping for him to do his leaving cert, because he wants to be an electrician. And my other little boy, he's doing well as well. And the baby, she's going into first year now in September. So thank God, yeah, they are getting a chance in life, and I hope they will improve from it, like, you know, because it is a big step in their life, they need it. You know, education is the root, like, really, isn't it?
What about your children, Mary? Are they going to school?
Yeah, my John's in school, and he's doing very well in school. And my Joseph's in a creche, and he does the words and everything in the creche, and he's doing very well.
Yeah.
So they're doing very well in school now.
Eileen, all your children?
I'm still two going to school over here in St. Mary's School. And that's what I'm just going to bring out about my Michael. He's nine. And one day he came home with his homework. Now, I know an awful lot about the homework. I can help him with that. But the sums, I was useless with, right? So one day, when I started here, something like, again, Mary's story, I knew nothing about the sums. Now, all right, what kind of money? Do you know what I mean? I won't give away money, kind of. But to take and to add things, I am a fool with it. Can't do nothing. So the child shamed me one day. Mammy, look, will you help me with my sums? I said, for God's sake, I said, I can't, because I don't know how to do them. So, until I come here, that's our maths teacher, Mary Mac, and she done wonders with my brain. She made me add and made me take away, and I think I'm doing very good here. And that's the truth. I'm with Bernadette and all the teachers here. I've learned things like that. It's worth carrying for the rest of your life that you can pass on to your children would. Do you know what I mean? So I'm very glad to be working in St. Basil's and all the teachers here. That's me.
We've got more education here than we ever got in school. And it's only 2 years here.
Yeah. I could have been a doctor here sitting here, but they never gave me that chance to be here. Could have been anything.
You might be in.
No.
Something good.
Well, we've come the full circle. It's been an amazing story. Absolutely. And I'm delighted that you all told me your stories. So, Bernadette Flanagan, Biddy Dorn, Eileen Connors, and Helen Connors, isn't it?
And Mary Cunningham.
And Mary Cunningham as well. Thank you all very much.